Who with it now? It is the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. We haven't started this podcast in a very normal way in a while, but here we are. We're doing it normal. We're pretty staid now. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. I don't know why I have to say it three times, the same name everywhere we are. But I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern. That name is going to change soon. I'm going to change my handle again.
Again?
No, yeah. We're waiting anxiously.
No, you're not. Shut up. First voice there, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, is Malkovich plans still available? Can I go and snag that?
I'm not switching back to Malkovich plan. It's going to be something different.
All right, it's mine.
Okay, fine.
I'm going to become a parody account of you.
Parody my parody account. What would you parody?
Yeah, Pokemon. Yeah, socialism.
I don't even talk that much about Pokemon on there. Socialism, though, yes, a lot of that. And the other one laughing is Ryan Matthews. Black is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD, who got his first chance to get behind the wheel of the Pride of Detroit Twitter account on Sunday. And
hey, man, my hands were not at 10 and 2 while I was driving that thing. I was all over the road. It was a wild ride.
You pulled a 360 in the ice.
It did. Metaphorically and then literally after the game. But the best part was when I was kind of just getting fed up with Twitter at a certain point in the game because I was so frustrated with the game itself that I think after Stafford ran that ball in, somebody tweeted something at us of like a gif of Stone Cold Steve Austin flipping off somebody. So I was like, retweet. It's amazing how much traffic that thing gets in a day. Like it was entirely like, I could not monitor that. Like I was watching TweetDeck and I was like, I don't know how anybody handles this thing. Like, get me out of this car. Get me out of this. Yeah, get me out of this seat.
You have to kind of be a mutant.
That's what I'm here for, guys.
Yeah, me and Jeremy, we're both mutants.
Mutants like X-Men.
Yeah.
Comics.
No special powers though. Absolutely none.
Just mutated.
Just mutated horribly. You know who's mutated and now down in a ditch? The Chicago Bears. Beat them down. We own the Bears.
Mathematically eliminated.
And mathematically owned. Even though
owned
we split
yet again.
One and one owned.
Even though we split the suit.
Doesn't matter.
We put them in the dirt.
8 wins in the last 9 now? Is that how we're phrasing it?
No, I think it's seven of last 8, yeah.
7 of the last 8. Yeah, that's how we're phrasing it now.
And the Lions have won 7 out of the last 8 games this season.
Yeah, I like it. Whoa. We own the Bears.
We own the 2016 season. We own the 2 seed.
We're going to talk about that on the podcast. We're going to be talking about some people drinking it deep in, but let's talk about that Bears game. And I know Ryan already, when we were doing the pre-show stuff, was like, can we not? But I don't know.
Like,
here's what I want to know from you guys, because obviously it was a bad game. It wasn't very fun to watch.
We're just
going to
jump in on this?
The Lions didn't play very well. Yeah, let's do it. I guess I don't know how I want to phrase this, but I guess, were you that surprised by this? Was this a huge disappointment to you? Obviously, coming off that Saints game, people were riding pretty high on this team. Is this a huge letdown to you guys, or is this kind of what you were oddly expecting?
I can't say that I was extremely let down. Like, I wasn't totally bummed out. I think in the vacuum of just watching that game, I was kind of bummed out. But then there were some lingering effects of, like you said, Jeremy, I wouldn't say that I was riding so high on this team based on the Saints win, but I thought the Saints win was maybe their best win of the entire year. Like, it was like their most complete game from start to finish. Like, the offense really, like, I mean, outside of some red zone attempts in the Saints game, like, you know, we had some failures in the red zone and we ended up with field goals when we left, you know, some points on the board, but neither here nor there. That was their best performance. And then the way that the Bears game started on Sunday, it was just, it seemed like it was not the same team. And I'm not sure, I mean, we can talk about this later, but this team really missed Travis Swanson. Like, it was a huge downgrade to have Graham Glasgow in there starting at center and having Lakin Tomlinson like Lakin Tomlinson back in at left guard. Like that was just a huge downgrade. And I don't know, just the game left a sour taste in my mouth. Like, it was great to have Levy back. Like, that might have been why it was kind of such a bummer too. Is like, the Saints game kind of left us on a high. I was feeling good about this team. We were getting DeAndre Levy back. It was like, what could go wrong today? I don't know. The Bears starting off the game and being up 3-0, and then the Lions offense throwing picks in the red zone like had never happened before, and Stafford pick sixes and gloves and all the nastiest nasty that we could have. It was a bummer.
I'm not disappointed for various, like, okay, during the game, I think I was in Ryan's position. I hated what I was seeing, loathing it even. But that's also because that was just the general fear and loathing that fills me in every Lions game this year, because this is what the Lions do outside of that New Orleans game. And I think coming into the game, yeah, my expectations got a little boosted by the New Orleans Saints and how we beat them down. Granted, now that I look back on that, I realize that Rams game they played was actually the outlier, not the normal for the Saints, because they played an ugly, ugly game against the Buccaneers, and the Rams, meanwhile, had about 42 scored on them by the Falcons. Cost Jeff Fisher his job. No more 7-9 bullshit. But I didn't know that at the time. But what I did know at the time was, okay, multi-parts. A, this is, and probably the biggest part, this is the NFL. Weird stuff happens each week. Weird stuff is almost guaranteed to happen, and that this just, it's not, you can't treat it like college football. You can't take from one game where they're playing extremely well and then hope for the same thing to happen the very next game, because that's just not how the NFL is set up to operate. It's so wildly random like that. There's also the factor of Jeff Triplett. Two, yeah, Jeff Triplett, ladies and gentlemen. The NFL is smart in its officiating. It always gets it right.
99% of the time, according to commissioner.
It works. 70% of the time, it works every time.
Right.
B is that this is also, I mean, at the same time where there is the idea that the NFL is random from week to week, we also know what the Lions are at this point, as far as, like, this is a team that's just, its identity is, it's going to play these close games. And it's going to play them repeatedly, no matter what you want to happen. And C is that this is also the history of the Detroit Lions making third-string quarterbacks look very good and possibly getting them contract extensions for no godforsaken reason. But no, I think it's mostly that. It's to me, it's the NFL, and I really can't put too much credence. You won the game, and that's all you can hope for, and that's all you can get graded on. That's all you get graded on. You don't go, like, the power rankings, we're all obsessed with it, but it's not the AP top 25. It's not the college football playoff top 25. It's, you have a win.
Yeah, and enough. I think that's a good point, and kind of going along with that, we all tend to overreact to the last game. So we're all a little hyped up because of the Saints game. Now we're all going to be a little bit down on the team because of the Bears game. But it changes week to week. We all get obsessed with these power rankings. We move teams up and down and up and down every week, but in the end, we know, like you said, we kind of know this team. However, I do have to say, I still came away a little disappointed in this game. There was this notion all week leading up to the game, and again, it's probably because of this hype machine that the NFL is during the week, that the defense had turned a corner. And I know they only gave up 10 points in the Saints game, but, or, I'm sorry, in the Bears game here, but it didn't feel like it, and they had to get bailed out at the end of the game to not give up that game-tying score with a couple of strange holding penalties. And I don't know. We saw these three safety formations. We thought that the Lions' defense had finally found something that worked. And this game, it was kind of strange because it was really the secondary that got torched in this game, not underneath stuff. It was Darius Slay getting burned on a deep play. They had like three or four deep 20, 30-yard plays in this game. That's just about the last thing I expected out of this game. And I think the secondary is good enough where it's going to rebound, but I was very disappointed by their performance.
Yeah, I mean, I would say too as well, like, the Bears always seem to have, like, the Lions' number when it comes to Matt Stafford, some of these picks. And by the way, that's, like, a big factor of why this game wasn't a bigger score, right? It was the bad throw that turned into a pick six and a rebound pick in the end zone that should not have happened. So there's that random factor that would have probably saved it from being less close than it was. And there's also the factor of Matt Stafford's finger being horribly mauled by Leonard Floyd, which I do think plays a factor.
Okay, well, before we get to the glove thing, the last two things I want to say about the Bears game. One, you know, going back to what Jeremy said about how, you know, the Bears offense only put up 10 points on the, you know, the Lions defense. Especially watching the Saints game, and even kind of watching, you know, in recent weeks, the Vikings and the Jaguars. Some of the best parts of the Lions defense has been their offense and the fact that they've kept the ball out of the other team's hands. Mm-hmm. And even though that the Lions offense, or the Lions defense rather, only gave up 10 points to the Bears offense, it, you know, even giving up 17 points, you know, on a pick six, like that, you know, giving up a, and you know, those extra 7 points on the pick six, that's like almost like giving up points on the defense. And I know that's kind of like a little bit out there, but I really think that one of the best parts of the Lions defense has been their offense and their ability to, you know, possess the ball. And, you know, the last thing that I kind of came away from the Lions game is the entire game was ugly for the most part, right? The turnovers were bad. We'll get into the glove thing. We'll get into Stafford's hand being mangled and all that jazz. But if there was any way that that game was going to end, it was going to end the way it did. Like Matthew Stafford scrambling for his life and running the ball in from 7 yards out and running over players in white jerseys and blue jerseys alike. And at the moment, it was like, game's going to end like this, isn't it? Like, this is how it's going to end. Like, the Lions are going to win on a broken play, on a scramble by the quarterback that should be doing it with his arm. And at first, it was like, it's just ugly. And it's like, I didn't like it. And then, you know, the sentiment that Chris brought up, this isn't college football. There are no AP top 25 rankings. You know, the Lions got the win, and that's all you can take from it. You know, they're 9-4, 6-1 at home. They have more business to take care of going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, like, any problems the Lions have, it wasn't because of stuff that just started in this one game. Whatever problems they faced in this game and struggles they faced in this game, those are structural problems we've seen the entire season. And you have to keep living with them because there's no way to change them at this point. There's no way to change them at this point. It could only get worse from here. How could it get worse? A really bad mangled hand. Do you guys want to take a break and then come back and talk about this? Or do you want to just... You know what? Let's do that. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. We got to talk about the hand and the glove. The glove of Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, whatever. I don't like Star Wars. I don't understand it.
Rogue One.
All right, continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, Chris Lemieux, Jeremy Reisman, Ryan Matthews all in here. And let's get going here. Let's talk about it. This is the big thing of the day. This brought down this brought down our elation pretty hard.
I don't even know if we had elation to begin with after that game, but...
I mean, you still won it. And there is, in that moment, the adrenaline of winning it on a last play defended by Darius Slay. But then immediately comes this news. And Africa, you got to turn down Africa a little bit because the reason for the season is in jeopardy. Matthew Stafford hand very much very, very, very hurt right now. What was it? His middle finger can now bend at a 90-degree angle. That's a fun little party trick.
Yeah, I mean, that Schefter report really sounded awful when you first read it. Basically that he has no control over that top portion of his finger. It's bent at a mangled angle, and, you know, just the words torn ligaments sounds really bad, but
well,
I kind of...
what also sounds bad is the actual name. I was looking it up. Proximal interphalangeal joint dislocation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. I went a little bit down a rabbit hole last night with all the medical terms and kind of looking at all these sports doctors online and seeing what they're saying. Basically, if you dislocate a finger, you're tearing ligaments anyways. That's the thing. That's what dislocating your finger is. And this is actually kind of common. It's obviously going to be uncomfortable. It's obviously going to be an adjustment for Stafford. But this sort of thing happens a lot. I mean, quarterbacks follow through and hit helmets, hit players, hit hand. I guess he hit his... I didn't even see the replay. I think Stafford hit his hand on someone else's hand.
Leonard Floyd, yeah.
But I would say against that, though, like, two things. One, Derek Carr, like, he... Okay, so he has the same injury, but it was his pinky finger. That doesn't matter as much as the middle finger when it comes to the throwing motion.
It depends.
I guess. But two, my second point to that, too, is, like, look at some of these windows Stafford's been throwing into. Just how we've been remarking all season about these incredibly tight, very precise windows he's been throwing into. And now suddenly you are changing one factor of that throw on these plays that we are sometimes wondering how the hell did not that not get picked off. Well, something just changed. What if some of those throws turn into being picked off?
That's a very fair point. And my biggest concern is with velocity, because a lot of the times he throws that bullet in there. There's no comeback against the Vikings for the first time, probably, with this injury, assuming that it affects his velocity, because that pick six that he threw is kind of a duck. I watched it again today, and it didn't really look like he tried to throw it that hard, and I don't know if that's because he couldn't, or he didn't want to risk it, or if maybe he, you know, just made a bad choice. But yeah, it's going to be an adjustment, and when Stafford's throws kind of live on the razor's edge of being intercepted and completed, that could be a big issue. I do think, however, that this offense is kind of surrounded by a lot of high percentage throws, a lot. You know, he gets those crazy tosses, maybe two, three, on crazy days, four or five times a game. But in general, it's these quick tosses, and he can probably, I mean, he's going to have an adjustment period, of course, but I think he'll be generally okay. Not unaffected, but okay.
He seemed more bothered by the glove than anything, too, and he can absolutely get adjusted to that.
I think Ryan wants to talk about the glove. He loves talking about the glove.
The glove?
Can't talk about the glove. Unless we're talking about Gary Payton, I don't want to talk about any gloves.
What about Michael Jackson's glove?
Michael Jackson's overrated.
Oh,
he's dead too.
Woo!
The only thing that I'm really worried about that Jeremy touched on a little bit was that, you know, this offense, like you said, it's built around high percentage throws. It's built around, you know, throws that might not take as much velocity or, you know, throwing into a certain window, kind of, you know, manipulating offensive linemen and getting receivers to specific areas and then, you know, getting the ball to them so that they can operate in space. But like Jeremy said, there are like three or four plays where it's like, okay, like let's see Stafford magic. Let's see what that arm can really do. And he's been hitting on a lot of those throws. If those throws don't happen, like, I mean, you talk about, I think it's toxic differential in terms of, you know, whether or not you're hitting on big plays, you know, quote unquote, big plays that go for whatever it's defined as like 40 something yards or whatever. If those plays aren't happening, you know, that makes this offense a little bit less potent. And I don't know, like, it's just been a bummer ever since the news came across from the Schefter report yesterday. It's one of those things where it was like, this team lives with Stafford and it's going to die with Stafford too. And that was just like the overall like feeling that I had yesterday. And it's kind of lingering into today, although I feel a little bit better about it, but I don't feel great.
I mean, to me, that's kind of like the key thing of all. Like, we keep talking about Matthew Stafford. Is he an MVP candidate? You take away even a fraction of Matthew Stafford, the Lions are not 9-4.
The Lions are maybe a 3-win team.
I wouldn't go that far, but I'm just saying, like, if there was a regression to Matt Stafford.
Oh, I'm going that far. About, like, I'm going that far. Are you kidding me? Like, this team would
six and seven.
Put Dan Orlovsky on this team. Tell me how many games he wins for you.
I'm not taking him out completely. I'm just saying if Matthew Stafford isn't honed this razor's edge, you are probably losing a few more games.
Oh, yeah, I can agree with that. Sure.
But, I mean, let's not forget he played three quarters on this finger without any sort of adjustment period against the Bears and managed to pull some Stafford magic at the end of the game.
Right, with his legs.
Sure.
And by the way, this Bears secondary has bothered him before, even when he was healthy. Remember, one of his worst games of the year was against the Bears at Soldier Field.
I mean,
bother him.
Yeah, that was his worst performance. You know, the two picks, just overall, it was the offense's worst performance of the year, and it still is. I don't know. Like, it's not even really just the secondary of the Bears, though. It's like their front seven. Like, the pressure that they were getting on Stafford.
The entire defense bothers him.
Yeah. Like, the front seven was just, it was a real problem for the Lions. And, you know, Jeremy pointed it out during the week. He was, you know, look, like, their pass rush is going to cause problems for the entire offense. And if anything, I thought the Lions had one of their better running performances of the entire year.
Yeah. Most rushing yards since week two.
Yeah, and I mean, the first half was largely like a dumpster fire. Like, they were having a lot of problems because it seems like they were really trying to make a point of emphasis to run, you know, up the middle, and it was just not happening for whatever reason, and they changed things in the second half, and all of a sudden, Dwayne Washington was ripping off, like, nice chunks of yardage, and Zach Zenner was doing the same thing, and, it was just a much better performance in the second half in terms of running the football, but, man, like, you want to be concerned about the next three games. Look at the teams that are generating pass rush. I don't know. I have to take a better look at, you know, what kind of pass rush. I mean, we'll get into maybe the Giants a little bit, but that'll be for first bite.
It would be. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I am worried about the hand. I really am, especially since the Lions are about to go on the road and play their first cold weather game outdoors. I mean, that's a lot of, like, that's already why I thought, like, I know you were confident before this about the Giants game being a win, but at the same time, I was kind of worried about it because, I mean, again, they haven't played outdoors in the cold at all. I know they practice out there, but just, man, it's now you're adding on top of this a mangled hand. It's a lot that's going to have to adjust to. And it would be something else if the Lions had a run game to fall back on, but they really don't. Like, I know Dwayne Washington and Zach Zenner picked up in the second half, but that wasn't there in the first half.
Yeah. I don't think this offense would ever attempt to turn into a running offense. They just have too many receiving tools to even try that, I think. The running game will always just be a complement to the passing game.
And yeah.
No matter what the status of Stafford's hand, that's not going to change. But I think you're right, Chris, in that this is probably the least ideal first matchup out of the gate with this finger issue. Like you said, out in the cold, first time all season of that. Then you're facing a really good Giants secondary, too. Really good. I mean, they made Dak Prescott look like the rookie that he actually is on Sunday night.
It just couldn't have come at a worse time, too, especially with these three games and especially with Green Bay still on your ass.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention that earlier. Like, I think part of the reason we were all so down yesterday is because everything just kind of kept going wrong for the day. Like, the Bears almost beat us, and then the Eagles blew a lead to Washington, which hurt the Lions' playoffs chances, and then just every single game that we needed to fall the right way to start getting clinching scenarios for this team to make the playoffs fell through. And then the Packers demolished... the Seahawks. Demolish
what
the Seahawks.
Fucking frauds the Seahawks are, man. Like, before today, you could have probably said, hey, who's going to challenge the Cowboys for the NFC? I would probably say Seahawks, but it's clear that as soon as they have to leave CenturyLink, they are fucked.
You have to wonder how bad the Earl Thomas thing really hurt that secondary, because they were getting torched by Aaron Rodgers.
Not even that. Like, what the fuck happened to Russell Wilson?
Yeah. Five interceptions when he's a dude that barely throws 10 in a season.
Hey, their offensive line is, to steal a quote from Chris Lemieux, basura. It's bad.
Basura.
It's no good. It's no bueno. It's
Pac-Man Jones yelling into the garbage can, garbage.
It's muy bad. But yeah, like it's insane because at this point, like after the Bears game, I was like, just anything that can happen good for the Lions' clinching ability, because maybe there's an outside chance that this finger could like get fixed or something just because we had so little knowledge about it. But it's just like nothing went our way, but some things kind of did go our way.
Well, before we get into that, just if the Lions end up missing the playoffs because of all this stuff going this way, this isn't same old Lions. This is just the greatest amount of luck you've probably had to start the season, and then it would probably be the worst amount of luck to have this injury happen at this time for a Packers team to be this resurgent and the NFC just doing you no fucking favors in the world. And it takes is one like, you know, the worst part of the schedule going wrong for you at the wrong time. Like, I'm sorry, like, if you're going to blame the Lions or say same old Lions if they end the season 9-7 and now and drop out of the playoffs, you can't say same old Lions about that, because it's like, you've seen what this team's been dealing with.
I mean, same old Lions has always been a lazy-ass analysis anyways. I mean, this team is nothing like it was, you know, 20 years ago, let alone 4 years ago. I mean, whatever. Same old Lions, people. Turn off the podcast right now. We don't want you.
We did get Levy back, and he was very good.
He was. And I'd love to go at length about that, but you guys are going to have to wait on the website, because our boy Andrew Cotto is working up something real good on that.
He's cooking the gumbo. I like it. Ryan, I think you had one more point you wanted to get to, a positive.
Oh, I mean, the only positive was that the Lions are in second place in the NFC now?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just, it's a razor's edge second place.
I mean, it still counts.
And you said it yourself, the Seahawks are Basura. The Seahawks are Basura. So, I mean, the Seahawks could lose a couple games down the stretch. I mean, they do have the 49ers. I'm trying to remember who else they have. Basically three teams that are probably out of the playoff.
Hold on.
They have the Rams.
I said the Seahawks offensive line is Basura.
Well, Chris was trashing the entire team.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make that distinction clear.
No, I just trash them on the road. Like, if they play a game on the road, they're no good. They need CenturyLink.
Well,
I don't know what it is about it.
Well, look at that. They've been supplanted from, you know, being at CenturyLink for any longer than just one game in the playoffs.
That's true. It's very true. And hey, we'd maybe host them if we were in the second place, huh? Maybe.
Get a bye week? Get a bye week?
I just can't think that far, though, because I think you said it right in a tweet yesterday, Jeremy, from the Pride of Detroit. Like, the seal, because of that Dallas Giants game, the ceiling has gotten lower and the basement and the floor has gotten higher. There is so little room now in this playoff picture. And that's why I still think it's an outside chance. But if the Lions end up losing their last three, they could be not in the playoffs.
And I think they won't.
Gut-wrenching.
I mean, I think there's no question if this team loses out, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, okay.
Because, I mean, here are the teams that won yesterday that are contending for the wild card. The Giants, the Packers, the Vikings, the Falcons, the Bucks, and Washington.
The Bucks right now are tied with the Falcons.
Yeah, six teams that absolutely needed to win on Sunday did. The only exception to that rule is Arizona, and they were likely out of it anyways. So, if your main goal was for the Lions to clinch a playoff spot as early as possible, this week was a disaster. No question about it.
Yeah, it's no good. It's no good, and we're all going to be hyperventilating for the next 3 weeks. This sucks, man. And it sucks because fuck the Packers. I don't think they're that good, to be honest. They've caught a bunch of these teams that are just going to shit.
But it's Aaron Rodgers, man. I've been warned about this.
Fuck
everyone.
That, man. No. There's too many problems on the team to just be Aaron Rodgers is good again.
It's worked for 10 years. This Packers team has been really good once.
The narrative's worked for 10 years. Fuck this.
But no, I'm just saying, this Packers team has never been great. That's why they've only won one or... Is it just one Super Bowl with Rodgers, I think?
But I mean, just look at their last three that they've won in succession. They won an Eagles team that's going to shit, and Carson Wentz is starting to look like a rookie again. They beat up on a Texans team that's just basura. And then they got
the
Seahawks at home in one of Russell Wilson's worst games, and the Seahawks have not impressed anyone outside of Seattle. And they're going to end the year playing at Bears, Vikings, at Lions. So, hey, Minnesota, you want to do us a fucking favor? Jesus Christ.
First, the Bears, man. Bears. The Bears need us a favor after injuring Stafford.
They could. Maybe they could just, you know, rip off Aaron Rodgers' head or something.
Like, what kind of comfy, cushy schedule did the Packers get towards the end? I mean, I know they had that gauntlet that they ran through where they had four road games in a row. But, man, like, home game against Seattle, home game against the Bears, home game against the Vikings. And then what? You get to go play in Ford Field inside the Dome for the game that's going to be, I think, for all the marbles. Like, that's going to be the game. Like, get ready for New Year's.
I warned you guys about this. I warned you motherfuckers about this. You were all like, no, the Giants games is more important than the Packers games. I'm like, no, no, no. Watch out for New Year's.
Well, I still think the Giants game is more important. I think if the Lions win this week against the Giants, they're in my opinion. I mean, not mathematically, but I think 10-6 is going to get them into the playoffs. It might not win them the division, but I think it'll get them into the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, I think we do have a little fuel for Rage Corner. Do we have a Wally's World, Ryan?
No.
No, okay.
Wally was eliminated from the fantasy football playoffs. Like, that's the only update I have. Like, that's the only thing that that's the only thing he's talked to me about.
Was okay. It Zeke's fault?
It was not Zeke's fault. He did not eat him out of a loss.
Jeremy go first. Jeremy, let's hear your rage.
Yeah, I haven't had one in a while because this team hasn't really given me a reason to be angry, and this one, I feel like I do this a little too often, and I'm kind of firing back at the fan base a little bit here. Because when the game started to turn, I saw the fan base turn as well. They're like, oh, I've seen this story before. Oh boy, here goes. The Lions get my hopes up and then dash their my dreams. Have you been paying attention to this goddamn team all year? Are you kidding me? There's 6 minutes left in the game and Stafford has a ball in his hand right now. This is where the Lions get their money. This is where the Lions get paid. This is where this team gets so exciting and so fun to watch. How can you call this game over right now? How can you expect the worst when all the Lions have given you is the best in the last 5 minutes?
As Draw Play Dave on Twitter said, when the Bears scored the pick six, the Lions have the Bears right where they want them.
Right? And it baffles my mind either how short-term memory these people have or the opposite, how much they just can't put the past in the past. Like, this is why this isn't same old Lions, because this team is prepared for this sort of situation. This team has the capability of going 75 yards in 30 seconds, let alone 6 minutes. So, you know, I was almost surprised that the Lions scored so quickly, because they left, what, like 3 minutes left on the clock for the Bears to go score. And even then, like, people are getting worried. And I guess rightfully so, because the defense was not playing well, and they were driving the ball, and it did, you know, the Lions needed a little help to stop them there. But people are like, well, you know, if Jeff Triplett wouldn't have called those holds, well, then guess we're all singing a different tune. Like, maybe, but maybe they kick a field goal and the Lions win in overtime and no one gives a shit anymore. Like, this is a Lions team that thrives at adversity late in games. So I just don't understand how there's still a fan base that panics when they give up a lead to, sure, a worse team, but they've done that and they've, you know, been losing in the fourth quarter in almost every game this season. So, I don't know why you're surprised. I don't know why you're panicking. I don't know why you are who you are, Lions fans, sometimes. It just confuses me.
So two things real quick. For the people out there that are saying, well, if Jeff Triplett wouldn't have helped out the Lions so much. Yeah, if my aunt had a dick, she'd be my uncle. So, like, I mean, Christ. I mean, we gonna hang on hypotheticals here or what?
Oh, do we need to rage against the refs in this game too? Because yeah, I know the Lions were getting some help, but Jesus Christ, like Jeff Triplett got a call completely fucking wrong against was it Taylor Decker? He got it wrong against
Glasgow.
Graham Glasgow. Yeah, he called him for illegal use of hands to the face when it was actually someone else sticking their goddamn mitt in Glasgow's face.
That was maybe the worst refereeing I've ever seen, except for there was that Michigan State game earlier in the year where I think it was Michigan State scored a touchdown. Like, they grabbed a touchdown in the end zone, and the ref was so out of his mind that he made the touchback symbol because he thought it was an interception. the other six refs had a head on their shoulders and was like, dude, that's a touchdown, and they fixed the call. Triplett, I don't know what his crew is doing, but it's an embarrassment.
Hey, so there's one other thing, too, to Jeremy's rage that he said that really sparked something in me. And before you guys give me my Reservoir Dog treatment, just let me make my comparison here. So I'm really wondering why the people who are ready to say, well, I've seen this movie before, like, I've seen the Lions do this, like, play well and then lose the game that they're supposed to win and dash all my hopes and dreams. Like, why do those people, like... live like why do they, like no like what no let me finish. Like, why do they watch football? Like, why do they try to take enjoyment in something which they clearly like don't want to enjoy? Like, are these the same people who go to a restaurant and put five singles along the side of the table as like some kind of like errant like threat to the waiter or waitress that's serving them? Like, I'm gonna take away $1 each time you don't do something right, each time you don't bring back the pitcher of water. $1 is going to go away. Like, if you don't bring bread out or tortilla chips and salsa, like, if you don't bring those out immediately, like, there goes $1. Like, these are the same people that are like, oh, you know what?
Is that a real thing?
Oh, that's a real thing. Those people deserve... Those
if I knew yes. someone in my family who did that, I would disown them immediately. What? Fuck those
no,
people.
No, this is a real thing. I've seen this. And people are advocating for it, like, on social media. They're like, oh, yeah, do this and you'll get the best service of your life. And it's like,
wow. Jesus Christ, those people have no fucking souls.
I have a whole new rage corner. Right,
and these are the same people that watch Lions games and they're like, well, I'm going to stop putting money in the product. Those people are still going out to eat. They still go out to eat. They just put all their money on the table and then they just take it away. Like, it's some kind of empty threat. Like, you're still giving the company, you're still giving the restaurant money. You're still paying for your bill. You're just taking away the tip. Like, I don't. This turned into three rages. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Actually, this actually bridges directly into my rage, actually.
Good.
And it's about this kind of mentality and DeAndre Levy. And maybe you're tuning in for the first time. Maybe you've just somehow been able to live your life without ever reckoning with your position in this world or in the universe. And maybe, like someone from Ryan's example, you are a person who just believes yourself because you spend money to be the master of all you survey. Let me fill you in on something. You're a customer, homie. You're a customer. Nothing else. And I'm done. And like, look, we've done rages against the people who have been screaming about DeAndre Levy for however long, man. We've been doing it all year, and I've seen the most ignorant NFL fans in my life come out from the Lions fan base talking about DeAndre Levy. I don't give a damn if you have a season ticket. I don't give a damn if you buy five jerseys. I don't give you a damn if you buy two jerseys and they both turn out to be like cursed, like Jeremy's.
Hey, he played. He's back.
I don't give a damn if you spend every Sunday sitting around talking about how you're supporting this team. You are not the fucking owner. You're a customer.
But he's taking money from me, Chris.
But here's the thing. Yeah, like the people who say like that they're like. You're the kind of person who are like going up to the post office worker and going, my tax dollars pay for you. You're a piece of shit. But more often than not, you're just ignorant. Because just think about this. Like, it baffles me that the idea that the fan, like, and you know what? Sports teams are guilty of this too. They spent so long with all these marketing campaigns talking about how the fan is super important. The teams wouldn't be here without the fan. And you know what? I would love for that to be true. I would love for that to be the case, that a sports team is part of the community, like, say, Detroit City FC. Those guys actually, like, those guys aren't outspending themselves, but the Lions aren't that. It's a commercial product you are enjoying. And your status as a fan doesn't matter. It doesn't. You could take away your season ticket tomorrow, your jersey sales tomorrow, and this team would still carry on like nothing had changed. And there's not enough of a consciousness among fans to create some kind of mass walkout. And to be honest, I don't even think that matters, because the revenue sharing for the NFL teams and the TV money is so stupid that even if all the fans walked out of Ford Field on the next game, I don't think it would change anything. And the problem is too, we wouldn't even need to get to that scenario, because you're in a goddamn minority when it comes to DeAndre Levy and his contract and how you think he needs to play right now to justify your dumb $50 spent on beer and hot dogs at a game. And when it comes down to it, man, like, I now that we've seen Levy come back, right? How many people were we retweeting yesterday, say, who were brazenly telling us on social media, Levy will never play again. And here he is on Sunday taking the field, and then everyone walks back to the same place. Well, it's about the secrecy. I don't like how the team was so secret about this. Homie, they ain't got to tell you shit. You're not a shareholder. You're not an investor. Not even the Packers. And
that's
Packers
not on Levy. That's not on Levy, for Christ's sake.
And that's not on Levy either. Like,
misplaced anger.
Go ahead and fucking blame the front office and the Fords or Jim Caldwell for the press conferences if you want to.
Be mad at Bob Quinn.
Yeah, be mad at them, but you won't be, because you'd rather be mad at the player, because for some godforsaken reason, fans still identify with the owners more than they do the players. And I can't comprehend why, because more often than not, you're in the position, you, with your work, are in the position of the player. You're an employee, not the boss. And you are a customer, not a shareholder. Not even the Packers fans who buy stock in the team. They're customers too, because you know why? Because they can't get their stock out from the Packers. That's like the biggest fucking scam in the NFL, by the way.
But it's like owning a star.
Yeah, like, but like, yeah, what good's a stock if you can't take it out, right? So you are, at the end of the day, a customer. So please, don't say what you want from Levy, and don't say what you want from the team in trying to cut him, because, like, and by the way, that's my favorite thing too. All these people are like, I want someone else in there who's hungrier, who's younger and hungrier than Levy. This isn't a unit that is one linebacker away. You need Levy plus the younger, hungrier guys.
I don't even think there's a guy hungrier than DeAndre Levy right now.
Holy shit, man. Like, yeah, he came back and he was remarkable.
And people, I mean, it's funny, because once you actually engage in a conversation with these people that want Levy cut, and you tell them, oh, you know what? If you cut Levy now, guess what? He's still on the books for $7 million next year. You only save $1 million. Well, God, that's another bad contract from Mayhew. It's like, oh, okay, so that's not your actual problem. You know, and now it's Mayhew, you deflect your anger.
You can't catch these people. They will always try to fall back on something. They'll fall back on the Mayhew bad contract, or they'll fall back on, well, it's about the secrecy, or they'll fall back on, I want someone hungrier. And it's like, you're just never going to be happy, and you just want to feel empowered about this shit.
Plus,
and
I bet you go back on that day where Levy signs that big extension, you find that same person, they're like, yes, Levy!
What a great deal! That was a steal!
Right.
That was a steal.
This is why these contracts are so much, is because injuries are so big and ridiculous that you need that sort of lockup guarantee. Otherwise, players aren't going to play football.
And I like the people also who are like, well, I just don't like him getting hurt repeatedly. It's like, this is football.
Oh,
what do you think happens in football?
Oh, you don't like him getting hurt repeatedly, but you're trying to rush him back onto the field?
You know, like, how stupid are you? Who also has suffered quite a bit of injuries in his career? Matthew Stafford.
let's go beyond that to Adrian Peterson. How many Vikings fans are we calling for, like, Peterson to get cut after he's... How many games has Peterson missed in the last, like, what, three seasons? Four seasons?
Well, one of them was because he took a switch to his child.
Right, besides that, I know we just stepped in that really bad, but...
But... How about we just switch gears back to Matthew Stafford?
Sure, I'm done with my rage, that's all.
He's about to have some kids.
More than a few.
I don't know, like, we just...
You want to get to the mailbag?
That sounds wonderful, Chris. Why don't you take us there?
Pull the escape pod here.
Mail time.
Mail time. Mail time. Mail time. Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail. It is time once again for the world famous Pride of Detroit pod podcast mailbag, where you take any question at all, with the hashtag AskPOD or a question left to us on prideofdetroit.com and the Ask POD
post. Don't forget those hashtags. Everyone's forgetting those hashtags.
Hashtag, yeah, guys, do the work. Do the work. It only takes about, what, 7 characters on Twitter? You got 130 more to do it. So, before we get started, I completely forgot about this, and I just want to bring this up just kind of as a cap to our earlier Matthew Stafford talk. And just, you know what, you can consider this part of the mailbag too, but I need an assurance from Jeremy moving forward. Because we're in the time of the year where last year we were torn asunder because of your loyalty to the Maize and Blue. And we were torn asunder because of Fitzgerald Toussaint. But this is a little different. With the quarterback situation in flux, I need you to denounce right here and right now the false prophet that lies on this Lions roster. Just denounce him by tongue and by throat. Denounce him as the false prophet.
I, Jeremy Lewis Reisman, hereby proclaim that if the Lions win this weekend and the Packers lose this weekend, I want Jake Rudock to play the rest of the season so Matthew Stafford can get healthy.
Shut the fuck up.
I don't actually believe that, by the way. Just in case people... Because we're about to read this review that says, someone among us is a Rudock homer, and I think he's talking about me. I'm being facetious.
Yes,
I don't
yes,
want
we
that
do
to
have
happen.
A new review. We're going to read this before the mailbag, as we always do. If you leave us a review on iTunes, Pride to Detroit, I'm going to find a way to change it so we get a little higher in the standings. But we need these reviews to climb higher, to continue dominance, and more people to subscribe. Even if you're listening on another device or on another player, please subscribe on iTunes. It helps us. Let's read this review from Extra...
back to you guys is that we will say whatever you write down.
Within reason.
No, I'll say it. I don't care.
What if they're proclaiming loyalty to Daesh?
I don't know what that is, but...
ISIS.
I'll say it. No. Hey.
Okay, hold on. We're not trying to get the feds involved in our podcast right now.
They're already involved.
Why are you giving our listeners any ideas, by the way? Yeah. We've proven that no matter what we say, don't make this Photoshop, they're going to make it happen.
All right, Extra Abnormal, 5 stars, quirky but great. While they tend to be pessimistic Lions beat casters and have one Rudock lover... which he isn't that bad, had a great preseason and probably should be a backup. And one, again in parentheses here, go green, go white, state homer, that make for great fun. We're not really that down, man. We're not that pessimistic.
I was going to say, I think that entire first chunk was just all about Jeremy being pessimistic and being a Michigan.
Not a state homer. That's
no,
probably
Alex. Being the Rudock lover.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Am I the pessimist of the group?
Stop it, man.
That was a legit question, but I guess I am.
Exactly. Well, we've been trying to figure out who all these people are, but the next one is very clear. The host is a bit clueless, but adequate.
Adequate? Hold on. That's Twitter bio material right there.
I think it is. It will be my new Twitter bio here. I hope they do a live POD cast. Would love to see them. Please, it doesn't hurt to be slightly more hopeful, as are most of us diehards fans. Again, I think we're pretty positive here. Aside from this podcast, has been doom and gloom, but we've been pounding the Kool-Aid pretty hard.
I'm the one being positive about Stafford right now. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to win next week against the Giants.
We are realistic, but also hopeful when things are going well. Nice to diagnose the problems, but no need to rail on for 30 minutes on it. I think we're doing better about our segments.
We tend to go long on some stuff, but that's fine. That's the fun of it.
Yeah. Keep up the hard work. Like the guests. Maybe you can invite a fan for a few minutes on a fan forum section to personalize it more. Great job, guys. Go Lions. Go green, white. I'm not doing a fan segment. I'm sorry. I don't know who some of you people are, and I'm kind of terrified of giving a microphone, because a microphone's a smoking gun. I'm doing it to keep you guys safe.
We do reach out to some fans and like call the if you're a good fan and you show it on social media or in our comment section, you get labeled friend of the show, and we have a couple friend of the shows.
Yeah, we have plenty of them.
Like Evan at Big Slick McDick.
You just wanted to say the Twitter handle again, didn't you?
I really did.
He does need more followers. He doesn't even have 100 followers. He should have a lot more. He's got like a Medium site too, where he sometimes writes, and his stuff is actually pretty decent.
Can we also give a shout out to John Whitaker, who
What's his Twitter handle? Twitter handle though?
His Twitter handle is at @WYVOL_.
He deserves it, because the gif that he made of Stafford slapping the base, like,
oh, so good.
So good.
And the week before that, he had the Africa guy, but it had like in that music video from Toto, he's taking down the book with the word Africa on it, and he just put Matt Stafford on the cover.
John Whitaker, beautiful. Friend of the show. Friend of the show.
Also a CFL fan.
Oh, it's been revoked. Already revoked.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. Melvin 2345 asks, best drink, alcoholic or otherwise, food and activity to soothe the nerves after a Lions game. Ryan, I'm handing this to you.
I don't know if it's just contextually because I was not on American soil anymore, but a Honolulu Blue does a whole lot to kind of just not just ease you into a level of comfortability, but to just kind of wash any like consciousness that you have of anything that's going on.
You were getting it made without the Mad Dog, and I think that might be the right path to take, to be honest. I might have to revise it and cut out the Mad Dog.
Like, I never got sick. And the other thing too, though, is that I couldn't find Sprite for the life of me. Like, they didn't have Sprite on the resort, and I wasn't gonna substitute it with 7-Up, so, but man, they were making these drinks very strong. And it was.
I think they filled it up with like gin and vodka, and then they were like, "All right, add the curacao now."
And the splash of lemonade, yeah,
yeah.
It was. That's a wonderful drink. Alex isn't here, but if Alex was here, he would say the Dirty Bastard by Founders.
That's a joke. Elephant Trees, next question here. Whiskey. I started drinking whiskey. Give me your low, mid, and top shelf options.
I think you're asking the two wrongest people to ask.
So I guess this is to me?
To you.
This is to you, Chris. You're the one who takes the question, so I figured you had an answer for it.
All right. I'm going to start bottom shelf. You know what? Wild Turkey. Bottom shelf Wild Turkey. Give me that.
But Matthew McConaughey sponsors them. How can they be bottom shelf?
Hunter S. Thompson drinks it.
All right. Too.
So yeah, a lot of continuation there. Mid-level, I mean, I this is a problem because I know bottom shelf. I know the bottom shelf pretty well. I would even say, like, Wild Turkey's kind of higher-end bottom shelf, but I digress. Okay, mid-shelf, I would probably go Buffalo Trace. I like that one a lot. I'm going to be giving you a lot of bourbon because that's what I drink. I'm not a bourbon bastard, but I do like bourbon more than I do Scotch or Irish. And then top shelf, I would say whatever your Tennessee friend is making in their bathtub.
That's top shelf?
Yeah, moonshine, baby. Actually, there was one place down in Savannah. I used to live in Savannah, Georgia. One place that would get in this stuff from a little distillery called MBR. And they had one, it was called Kentucky Black Dog, and it was a moonshine that had been smoked in tobacco mills. And they put that in a cocktail with some, like, agave nectar and, like, a crushed piece of orange, and it was really good.
Oh, man, that does sound pretty good. This isn't a Wally's World, but Wally has relatives that live in the hills of Kentucky, and they make their own moonshine.
Yeah, man, it's the best. It's the best. You got to get it homemade, though. Don't trust anyone putting it on a shelf for you. That's not the spirit of the shine.
Ah, so it's not top shelf. It's just...
No, it's top shelf.
No.
There's no shelf involved.
Right. That's the thing, though. Top shelf doesn't sit on a shelf.
Exactly. I don't know. I think if you're going top shelf for bourbon, you're probably paying too much. But I digress. Let's see here. Ty Finch from Twitter asks us, who would win an 11-on-11 football game scenario between 11 mozzarella sticks and 11 full-size Butterfingers?
Hit the Cena. Get out of here with that question.
Can we hold on? I mean, like, the reason that the Butterfinger would win is because with 2010 sales of $598 million, Butterfinger has become increasingly popular and is typically ranked as the 11th most popular candy bar sold in the world. $17.68 billion worth of United States chocolate market between 2007 and 2010. So I'm just saying that the Butterfinger is so highly respected. It's like the, what would be like the football team equivalent of 11 Butterfingers?
The Browns. The Browns.
The Chicago Bears.
You're disgusting.
Bears.
You. Will you stop it, both of you?
Next question, Blake Berry. What's better, Christmas or Hanukkah?
Yeah, I like that question.
I technically get to celebrate both now because I'm back around near my stepmother who is Jewish.
I got an answer. Neither. Neither are fun to celebrate.
Sounds like someone hasn't had 8 crazy nights in his life before.
I'm Scrooge over here. I can't say neither because I've never celebrated Hanukkah.
Yeah.
But I mean,
Jeremy, don't lie to me. There are not 8 crazy nights.
Would Adam Sandler lie to you?
Yes.
Jeremy, yeah, if you lived in Michigan, I'd celebrate Hanukkah with you.
I appreciate that. Dreidels are awesome. They're not. They suck.
Okay, next question. Staying with Twitter here for a second. From Joe Boo 3, any chance Adrian Peterson has a good game against the Packers?
I think we're jumping to conclusions here that he even plays. I highly doubt he plays, but Packers kind of have a good run defense, so no.
The offensive line is still incredibly bad for Minnesota.
Yeah, they got all sorts of problems. I wouldn't be worried about Adrian Peterson at this point. I wouldn't be worried about the Vikings at this point, because the only way they win the division is if the Lions lose out and they win out. And I don't think either of those things are going
to
happen.
Yeah. See, the other thing about the Vikings, too, is I've seen a lot of people try to, you know, create a sense of optimism by saying that, hey, you know, the Vikings' pass defense is pretty good. It's like, are you looking at statistics going back all the way to the beginning of the season or to now when they don't have their starting strong safety and Harrison Smith, and they're missing, you know, other key components that, you know, weren't there at the beginning of the season as well. And
they look good against the Jaguars.
Yeah. And by the way, have you seen the Vikings play offense lately? Because have you met Sam Bradford? Have you met their offensive line?
Matt Asiata.
Asiata.
Next question from Wyvol from John Whitaker.
Oh.
Friend of the show.
Oh. Friend of the
on
show.
On a scale of ex-friend
of the show.
Idiot. On a scale of 7 to 9, how do you grade the Jeff Fisher firing?
Okay, he's friend of the show again. Love that question. Love that question.
God, what a fucking dumpster fire of a situation, man.
I was going to say, there wasn't an answer to that question. Like, we were supposed to just let that question breathe, right?
Yeah. We just set it there. And let's go on to another friend of the show, Evan, at Big Slick McDick, which we need to keep saying his name every time. Based on the current playoff teams, what matchup do you like best for the Lions? Also, what is the best hot sauce? So the second part of this thing here, I know what he's trying to do because he said sriracha was trash, and I told him I had to rethink our relationship.
Oh.
Because nope. Yeah, so no man who is not a friend of sriracha, like, sriracha is that good.
Well, let me just say, I don't want to get off topic. First of all, let me answer the playoff question.
Yes, let's get the actual Lions question.
I think if there was a team that I'd want the Lions to play, I think it would probably be the Buccaneers.
Really? You'd play them?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd rather play the Buccaneers.
They're hot.
I would. They are hot. I mean, who isn't hot though? Like you're not gonna play Seattle. They're gonna win their division.
Well, I mean, if the Lions
stop it,
potentially get a first round bye.
Oh, that's right. We're not allowed to be pessimistic on this. We're supposed to be the upbeat people. You know what? I don't care who the Lions play. They'll trounce anybody.
There we go. I think I would actually answer the other team from the NFC South. I think I'd rather face the Falcons, to be honest. I think really? This team matches up fairly well against good offenses and bad defenses. See the Saints game. Whereas a good defensive team can really hold this team down like the Titans did, the Texans did. You know, the Bears even last week I would consider an okay defensive team. So I don't want to face a team like the Bucks or the Seahawks or the Giants for that matter. I'd rather face a team, maybe even Washington again. Let's play them again. That'd be fine.
Nothing on the hot sauce?
No, I have a lot to say on the hot sauce. First of all, so today, just to be the pot stir that I am, I got into our Slack chat and I said that scrambled eggs are the best kind of eggs. And Jeremy Reisman told me that he wasn't going to buy into me and my my attempts to get people all fired up.
You're right, though.
I know I'm right. That's the thing.
Oh, boy.
The second thing...
Rage quarter next week. Got it all. I'm going to write it out.
The second thing is that Jeremy said that the best additive to put on your scrambled eggs is hot sauce. So if anybody has a hot sauce take, it's got to be Jeremy Reisman.
You know, that's also right. Yeah. Get out of here with your ketchup on eggs.
I'm sorry. Ketchup and scrambled eggs is a meal for three-year-olds. That's fucking ridiculous.
Don't even. No. No. This is... Dude, the thing with scrambled eggs, you can do so many different things with them that do not make them a three-year-old's food. Like, they are... Like, you cannot equate them to chicken tenders. Like, you chicken can, tenders but... are a three-year-old food. Or for somebody who has been drinking too much Presidente and it's it's 2:30 in the morning and I gotta order room service.
Or someone who is at a Quick Lane's Bowl and has just very bad decisions about his cuisine.
Yeah, or somebody who is at a dive bar in Kalamazoo about to go to a Ring of Honor show and he decides that he's gonna order chicken tenders. Alex Reno. I like Frank's Red Hot.
I do too.
I like Frank's. Hold on. So the other thing, I prefer my hot sauces to be green.
Really? Ooh. So okay. I can buy that.
Like a little green chili from New Mexico type thing?
Actually, if we're just going straight up hot sauces, I actually do have a favorite. I do like Cholula a lot.
No, that's really good. They have that at Hot Taco.
Yeah, Cholula is really good.
Shout out to Hot Taco, future sponsor.
Hot shout out. God, I miss them. They were really good to us. Okay, Age Rain asks, if the Cowboys lose to Tampa on Sunday, could Jerry put Romo in against the Lions instead of Dak? I guess it goes to a bigger question. Would you rather face, and I know we kind of asked it earlier on, kind of on, but more on the idea of, hey, maybe they rest their starters. But still, after seeing what you did of Dak last on Sunday night, would you rather face Tony Romo or Dak Prescott right now?
I don't think this is very hot takey. It might be, but I think I'd rather have the Lions play Dak Prescott.
I mean, he looked shook last night.
He did. And I don't know, from the things that I saw from Levy, and I don't want to, you know, just use him to define the entire defense or to say that DeAndre Levy is back by any means, but one thing that he looked pretty good at was patrolling the field from sideline to sideline. Like, I mean, he ran step for step, and he evened out a Jordan Howard run and took him all the way to the sideline. And that's like a huge plus against a quarterback who's mobile like Dak Prescott. So, you know, I've seen DeAndre Levy play Tony Romo before, and it didn't end well.
No, it did not.
Just put my two cents in here real quick. First off, Jerry Jones has already said that he's not going to rest starters, so I don't think we'll will play Tony Romo, but I would totally want to play Tony Romo.
Hold on. But
well, this isn't in the case of a starter being rest.
Yeah, would Dak Prescott be the starter by then if they go out and they fail again in a row?
Dude, two losses in a row, and they
yeah, you think
throw the season away?
Jerry Jones is that goddamn
okay,
irrational.
That's a fair point.
I was going to say, dude, really? Like, if there was any owner who tried to stick his hand in the pot and stir it, that'd be him, right?
I mean, I think that would be insane of him to do against two really
Jones
good defenses.
Sure.
But no, I would rather play Tony Romo because when's the last time he played a game? Like, this is going to be a preseason game for him. That's how rusty he's going to be.
No, dude, you don't want that. Tony is the same amount of letters as the name Matt, and the Lions don't do good against quarterbacks with the name Matt.
1-0 this year.
All right, let's see here. Madrigals 2-1-1-2. Jim Bob, if a team tries to hire Jim Bob Cooter as their head coach, would the Lions fire Caldwell to keep Jim Bob Cooter and Stafford together? This seems a little insane, but it's kind of a nice little... that's not going to happen, but it is kind of a nice little gap to talk about all these people suddenly like gushing about the idea of Jim Bob Cooter being a head coach. Guys, he's been a coordinator 2 years. Not even two seasons. I would say anyone talking about trying to make him a head coach, they're going to be sorely disappointed because you just don't know what the hell you have. And to be honest, like I'm also coming to the belief that being a head, like if you want a good head coach in the NFL, he cannot be a good coordinator. Good coordinators need to remain coordinators. Your head coach has to be a manager, not an X's and O's guy. And I think that's kind of been lost, especially we keep doing this every week. We talk about the coordinators from the Patriots by way of Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia, people who really want them. But I think the reason why they won't make good head coaches is because they're guys who are more about the scheme for those sort of things. I'd rather have a head coach who can manage stuff.
And Jim Bob Cooter's 31. Let's pump the brakes on him at least a little bit. I mean, he's barely been in the NFL. He's a baby, so he's not going to get any head coaching gigs next year. I still think Terrell Austin is probably going to get some interviews, especially the way the Lions have kind of turned their defense around.
That's fine, though, to me. That's fine. If we lose Terrell Austin, I would rather lose Terrell Austin at this point. I honestly believe there's probably other defensive coordinators out there that could be better. Granted, that's easy to say right now.
Yeah. Isn't it?
TJW Go Blue, favorite Christmas movie? I'm guessing Chris will say Die Hard. TJW, do you honestly think that low of me?
I would have said the same thing to you.
I don't like, no, it's not Die Hard. We're still not spoiling the list cast, by the way. We're saving it here. We'll get to that soon, but we're not.
Whoa.
I just wanted to...
Whoa, wait. Do what? I not know something?
What?
Are we doing a list cast on Christmas movies?
We announced this last podcast. You might have been just extremely drunk.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Hey, just a hint then, because now I'm privy to the knowledge that we're going to have a Christmas movie list cast. Batman Returns is going to be on my list. I'm just saying.
Oh, no.
That's the right answer, by the way.
Oh, God.
Tomfoolery27, what would it take for the sports media to finally shut up about the Packers?
Get them eliminated from the playoffs. Shit. They lose this week, the Lions win, they're gone. We don't hear Aaron Rodgers.
No, because then they'll be talking about whether Mike McCarthy gets fired.
Well, he was fired midseason, according to everybody else, right? Like, he was on his way out, like, the head coaching search was already underway. That's the thing.
Schrodinger's coach.
The only way to get the Packers off of everybody's mind is to just have them off of TV and away and gone and not part of the playoff picture.
But they'll still be because they're on all those it's not Safe Auto. What is the State Farm? They're all in the State Farm commercials.
But everyone will point and laugh at him and put crying Jordan faces all over him. So that's great. I would love
that's
that.
That's true. GD42, if the Lions don't win a divisional title, would it be because of a legitimate reason or same old Lions? Man, if they don't win one, it's going to be because of that goddamn hand. I'm sorry.
This team, let's be honest. We're all a little wary of this team in the first place, and they're playing, you know, a 9-4 team this week, an 11-2 team next week, and a 7-6 team the following. It's not an easy road. if they lose, they'll probably earn the L.
Yeah, but, like, it's not going to be same old Lions. This is the hardest part of the schedule here. This just feels like, to reach back into a bit of Detroit lore, like, this would feel like when Isaiah Thomas had that, like, amazing game after he, like, completely mangled up his foot. And then he was just basically done for the rest of the series, and the Pistons ended up losing the series after that. The 88 finals. This would feel like that.
Ryan looks super happy that you brought that up.
I'm really not. You weren't even born by
88.
Doesn't mean I haven't watched all those games and felt Isaiah Thomas's pain.
Watch the Bad Boys 30 for 30 and just bawled your eyes out?
No. Yes, but if we're talking about 30 for 30, everybody needs to be on notice for the XFL one that's coming up in February. Baby.
Hell yeah.
He hate me.
Hey, he hate me.
So do you guys see that Jeff Brohm from the XFL is actually Purdue's new head football coach? Jeff Brohm, who famously, like, he got, like, completely knocked unconscious during an XFL game, was taken away in, like, an ambulance and came back the next week and is like, is this not the XFL?
Perfect. Hey.
Boy, that doesn't seem outdated at all.
That sounds like he went through all the necessary and proper steps of concussion protocol.
Critical perspective. As a Lions fan, how should I feel right now?
Quarterback Jeff Brohm, 7 TD passes, one of the XFL's first stars. Amazingly, he'll start tonight after a punishing shot that knocked him out.
My first reaction was I was shocked, stunned, dazed, confused, was kind of in another state of mind.
I saw his head one way in his body, and I'm like, oh, goodness.
You know, his nose was outside his ear hole, and I was like, man.
And his helmet was halfway off his head, and he was just laying there. I don't know if he was breathing or not.
The concerns for quarterback Jeff Brohm.
So then they had to take him to the hospital to get the x-rays, and once those came out okay, then I was able to come back to the field with a neck brace on.
For a guy to take a hit like that and then come back on the sideline to cheer his team on, that really was touching. You know, I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it.
Jeff Brohm, how in the world are you starting this game tonight after taking that hit just 6 days ago?
Well, let me answer that question by asking you two questions. One, is this or is this not the XFL? Yes, it is. Two, do I or do I not currently have a pulse? Yes, I do. Let's play football.